done by the same man. And then Eric R., he, up here, he had his, maybe about the same time as Carlson's. But he had a beautiful barn. It looked real pretty when he got through. Oh, well, the other barns were nice looking too, but it was just a little bit different than the rest of the barns that were built.
They'd hire men to come in and build the barns?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, people wanted work. And so people wanted work, and this way they got a chance to work as on building, and of course they needed quite a few men. We only had about three men working for us that worked on our barn.
Did you help out at all?
No, but we had one old man, Julia Nelson. Now she used to be Julia Moody. Her father would hew these great big timbers and make these beams to hold the barn together. And they were heavy beams. It was his job. And I don't know how in the world he could do it, because it was almost perfect logs, you know. Some were big, maybe 2 feet square. Be every bit of that, maybe somewhere bigger than that. And he'd always make them smooth and quite, and that was mostly all done by hand with an axe, and then he had this thing to smooth out the beams and so forth. Oh, sort of a blade, a couple handles on them.
Did a lot of people come to help build the barn? Did you have a barn raising?
No, we didn't have a barn raising. You know, lots of places they do have barn raising. And the other, well, I better stick to my bush.
What were you going to say that you decided?
I was going to tell about they used to have, when the butcher bees, lots in the winter time. In the winter times, they had people butcher for the season or for the winter, and some would have 5 or 6 hogs that they'd butcher for their families, and they'd have the whole neighborhood coming over, help cut up this meat. First butcher and scald, kill and scald the. Has called them vats, that they'd roll the hogs in these, and sort of a, put them in scalding water, and then they'd have old blades or something like that, and they'd scrape all the hair off. And then after they'd scraped all the hair off, and even took off the knuckles on the pig's toes, and they saved everything. They'd open them up. They'd open them up and take the insides out. And then the others would cut them up into hams and shoulders and ribs and so forth, you know, spare ribs, stuff like that. And some used the sugar cure, and some of them used the smokehouse, and some people would smoke their meat, and others would put them in a sugar cure. But the only way that you keep that meat and keep it, let the body heat of the animal off of them and hang. We should let them hang, maybe a couple of weeks. Wouldn't hurt them a bit. Now, unless it's soft weather, you possibly would take it sooner than that. But if you were in a hurry, well, you'd let them hang in the cold weather. But if you'd just butcher those pigs up and cure them before you get the body heat off them, they won't keep. Yeah, it's happened that the people, too big of a hurry to get their meat taken care of, then it spoils. So you gotta be sure of what you're doing. everybody had to always butcher in the wintertime. We butchered pigs and we butchered beef. And
would you have parties for butchering
most of them? No, we didn't, but the people at American Ridge did. They always had a party, butcher bee. And like Golden Deer and everything else. And they would all come and all have a big time at the same time. But here on our ridge, it seemed like each family took care of their own. And it was quite a process because you'd work for maybe, 10 days to 2 weeks to get all your meat taken care of. You know, it wasn't only butchering, it wasn't hard to lay that down and brine, salt brine and stuff like that, and cure it for 6-8 weeks. And then you could take it out and dry it off, and then you would put it in there. But the best thing you could do is, we used to have so many oatmeal sacks. Oh, they were quite large, that you could put a ham in it or so forth, but that isn't enough. And after you get that on real good and tight, then you should have another sack, not necessarily a gunny sack, but we used to get these pea sacks or something like that, quite heavy one. And you put that around your meat and you tie that loose. You don't want it tight on your meat because then it would possibly build you. And then you'd hang it maybe up in the rafters and maybe upstairs if you weren't using the room there, if it's dry. But it had to be in a dry place, not too damp. And we had the best meat we've ever eaten. I believe it was Driscoll Ridge. We lived in a log cabin, and Jim Pence owned it, and his father had owned it, I think, before he. And that was built in 18-something, I forgot what it was. But anyway, we lived in it for 5 years in his home. We rented their farm. And so we hung ours upstairs under the rafters in the window to the east, and the window to the west would be mostly open all the time. And that way we had a breezeway, so even at night, you know, when it was a hot day, well, the upstairs was cool. It was quite cool, it was fine with all. Yeah, that was days of real sport, I guess. really out there, everybody, we went through depression. And, you couldn't afford to hardly send a letter. There was no money. We could only get 6-7 cents a dozen for our eggs. And butter fat, I already said, was a little bit more than that. But we got cash out of the cream that we sold. But it never amounted to more than about $5 a month. We didn't have that much cream. But with that $5, we bought sugar, or coffee, or maybe a pair of shoes, or something that the kids needed. But we had, it would seem like somebody would have to have a pair of shoes, you know, maybe once a month, because the first one to wear theirs out, and then the other, and lots of it was made out of paper.
They were made out of paper?
Yeah, but you wouldn't know it. But we paid $5 for a pair of shoes that we bought in Troy. And they didn't last more than about a week or 10 days, and the toes were on them. So we examined them, and they were practically all paper. So no wonder that they would wear out so soon. So of course we get on to that, but children's shoes were more expensive almost than the grown-up shoes, always were. And lots of times children's clothes was more expensive than some of the other things for grown-ups at that time. I don't know why, but of course if you got a little child, you always think, well, wouldn't that look cute on so-and-so, you'll buy it, or, you know, just because you think that. But we didn't have that much clothes though, because the kids used to wear overalls and coveralls or shirts, or else we'd sew them shirts out of old clothes or pieces of stuff that we had.
Did you sew a lot of clothes?
I sewed an awful lot. many years ago when the kids were small, box sewed everything that the kids wore. And I sewed, a lot until, well, Marie was in high school. And after that, clothing got so much cheaper that it didn't cost very much. Goodness sakes, you could buy a dress for $1 or $2 or $3 or $4 or $5. It wasn't too much. The $5 was quite high because we didn't have a lot of money. But they even had dresses for 39 cents at Penny's. I remember that. But they were made cute. But I don't think they seemed to be fast car too. So I did have a few of those for everyday dresses, you know, and they look pretty nice for a while that you go away in them. But like I said, the dresses weren't high. And we lived on the Halsa place then, next to Brittany Halsa's, where Horton's in now. And, we bought toys for the kids for Christmas and a little bit something for each one, but the day after Christmas, then the price of the clothing went down. And so Ernie went to Moscow. I don't think I did, but he saw all these bargains. And he bought Lois a wool dress, kind of a two-piece Russ Clark pleated skirt and a nice top on it, for $5. And he bought clothes for the kids and whatnot, you know, because it was just couldn't afford to. Well, Marie was in high school and everybody thought she had so many nice clothes, but she made her clothes and I sewed for her too. But she always looked nice in whatever she put on. She knew how to wear clothes and that made it look like she'd had lots of clothes. Well, here comes to being Easter. I bought her a dress, and it was real cute. It was a jersey, and I think it was a pleated skirt, you know, kind of how jersey hangs. It was full skirt. It was real nice. Anyway, and I think she got a pair of shoes. No, she didn't get a pair of shoes, but I saw a coat for $5, and it was navy blue with this white stripe in it. And it looked real nice on her. But when she got home, she cried. She said that I want a pair of shoes, but I bought her the coat instead. Well, I said, I thought the coat would be better for the reason that she needed that too. But she cried when she got home because she went and bought that coat. Well, I talked her into it anyway. But anyway, I suppose then we went to town a little later and got her a new pair of shoes, but then, you know, it was so hard to get clothes in those days, and she took such good care of her clothes, so never wear them out anyway, pass them down to somebody else, I guess. I did. I sewed some of Marie's dresses over for Lois, because Marie was the oldest in the family, and Lois was the youngest, and so it was kind of fun to make new dresses out of old dresses for the reason that I didn't feel I was losing anything if I make a mistake on sewing, you know, because it was old stuff. But if I got a brand new piece, it'd worry me to death, because if I cut that up wrong, it would be too bad. But with these other dresses, and I could tell what kind of a dress I could make out of that kind of material and so forth.
I remember last time Ernie reminded you of one night you cut up a pattern.
Oh yeah, and I didn't have anything for John to wear. He was just a little kid, about 4 years old or something. I don't know what he's that old, Rossi for. And I didn't know what he was going to wear to church. We always went to church and Sunday morning. So anyway, I had an old pair of pants that the kids had worn the knees out. And so I used the back part of the pants, and some of that you could use both the knees and the other and make for the bib, but I don't know how I managed. But anyway, I got a pair of pants, and so Mrs. Berg, kind of the minister's wife, kind of smiled at me and Harry John comes a new pair of pants, and I pressed them all up and looked like new. And she said, did you make them nice? Smile like Cal laughed. And I said, I did. But Auntie had given me a black fur coat, I would say. And pretty nice stuff in it. And I took the her coat and I made myself a coat. I bought a pattern for this one. And it turned out so nice. And then I had a hat that I wore when I was 16. And anyway, and I'm looking through the rag bag, well, I found it was made out of velvet. And it was just nice, just velvet to have a little bit, so it never faded or anything. And I found enough to put a bow on my hat. And I think I turned the hat around backwards. Anyway, I did something. I turned up the brim or something, and I put this bow on the thing. And I come to literary, and we had literaries in school, and so. Oh, the one where Hal got that her outfit, and I made it, and so it looked real nice. So then the minister's wife, she wondered where in the world I got. She knew that I'd made it over from something, but she thought it was so nice, so she went and bought a pattern just like mine and made her old fur coat over. She'd had it for 10 years or more. And so she made her coat over after my pattern. But it did make me look real nice. So could afford to have a nice looking coat in Depression time. It was black fur, it was pretty. But
did you shop a lot in Troy in the Ole Johnson
Mercantile store, I think it was called. It had everything there. Everything. When we first, many years ago, you could buy lovely clothes that come out from New York. Just beautiful stuff. And although it was a pretty good price, lots of them were $80 and stuff like that, because they were really the fur coats, you know, and of course now it'd be lots more than that, but you figure on $80. And wedding dresses, and they had lovely, lots of dresses you buy, dresses, and graduation dresses, lots of them would buy their graduation dress, and they'd come around $14, $15, $16, $18. But they were real pretty, made out of real silk, and they had nice styles too. But they had yardage too, that you could buy net and silk and satin. But anything you wanted, you could get at the store. And also, they had millinery. And Anna Hall said her name was Anna Westbrook at that time, and she worked upstairs and made hats, beautiful hats, you know, all kinds of pretty hats. And we also, and then there was a balcony on this upstairs that you could go around the whole building, and part of it was furniture, and furniture, and I think they had men's clothing on one side too, but see what else did they have there. But I know you could go clear around, and they had something up there, mostly furniture though up there.
Did they sell shoes?
Yes, and they had the shoe department downstairs. And then they had a hardware department where they had everything. And then they had the grocery department too. And they had a secretary there, just a full-time secretary taking care of all that business there. And And then, oh, you could buy anything. You could buy all kinds of things. You could buy, Christmas time you could buy all kinds of toys and stuff like that. And of course, they had the men's department and for the, you could buy all kinds of stuff like that. But, I can say, as far as going into the grocery department there, you bought bananas and oranges and you bought things by the barrel like anchovies or smoked herring and cranberries and lutefisk, they call it. So they were all set and nuts and candy and so forth. But that was a real interesting store because, and it was heated. It was it had hot water heaters and so forth. So it felt so good to come in there and sit around that those heaters and warm up, you know. And then you go maybe up the street to a grocery store. Well, the grocery store too. That was a little bit of a dry goods store too. Mr. Bowman ran the grocery department, and Mrs. Bowman, she had dry goods and notions, and I think they too probably had hats and clothing, maybe some too. Then further up the street, we had a couple of theaters there, but after
a couple.
Sometimes two, and not always in the same place either, because we had one across the street where the bank is now. That went on. Then above that,
did you go to shows much?
No, just real special. We went to what was called Shepherd of the Hills, and that was about the 18th of December, and this is time that they prophesied it's going to be the end of the world. So we're all determined we're going to go down and see the Shepherd of the Hills, and it was a good show. And it was just really interesting for us kids, but we weren't worried about the end of the world coming. We were supposed to freeze to death, I guess, for one thing, too, because it was awful cold. And we'd go down in the buggy or hack or cutter or something like that, or sled.
Who told you that the world was going to end?
People that prophesied did that. But I got off from that. But we had them. We had always about two theaters going, and for a while we had a theater about where the Grange Hall is now, I think, and that went on for quite a few years too. But that was interesting, and they had good shows. They had shows of all over other countries too, besides, you know, real good shows. You know, that anybody can go and enjoy a good evening, you know. We never had any worries about it. And I think our people were more honest and brought up more strict, because we never had any trouble to speak of, you know. Parents looked out for their kids and so forth, and I think they were just easier to manage. And then mostly children were home. They weren't like now in the car days where they're take the car and go, and they intend to really be good kids, but something could always happen to you without expecting it, you know, that these things happen, you know. Something break down in the car, or maybe didn't have enough gas in the first place or something, and dry and out of oil or something, you know. And we didn't have the roads, because the roads weren't very good for cars until they got them rocked. And they got them, started to get them rocked in about, how long have we been rocked roads? Not too awful long. I don't remember exactly now, but maybe around 20, I guess 1920 or something in there. I remember though. But my father worked on that to see that we get Rock Road. We got the rural free delivery before that. It came out to, I think first, once a week, maybe come twice, once a week. Then they come out twice a week, and then finally we got it every day. And that was really something to see. And of course we were thrilled to death to go and get the mail. Of course they finally got a hold for us, but we all ran up there to get the mail. It was interesting, but we were enough people, in our family that we'd probably each one get a turn at it, can we go and get the mail today? And we'd visit a little bit with our cousins, but we weren't supposed to. We were supposed to come right back.
How far did you have to go?
Just up to the border here. But, and then before that, it had to be in about 1908, I think, is when we got our telephones, and my dad started that too. And he worked hard on all these projects that we would have.
Talk more about him putting in the telephone?
Yeah, my dad, he started out by having a telephone on the barbed wire fence from our place to our uncle's here at Gullard. And so we could talk back and forth. And so then he tried to get these other people interested in wanting a phone, and they couldn't see no use why we needed a telephone. Well, it finally went, I think Eric Gallner was the first one that had a horse to fall in the well. So anyway, he called up Dad, and then of course he managed to get the horse in the well. But it wasn't too often, many years later, Carl Westbrook had a horse in the well. And they break through, lots of times to water horses from a wash tub or something like that, water by the well. But this horse could have been running loose or gotten loose or something and come up and anyway fell in the well. And it was such an excitement, because they had to get pulleys and pull them up, They got him just at the top and just then he fell down in again, And then, of course,
run up to see what was going on?
No, we didn't. I heard about it. And so then they got him finally up and the next time that they really be careful so he wouldn't go back in the well, because lots of times the horse has been in a well maybe for several hours. The water is so cold that they're kind of stiff when they get them out, and of course maybe cramped too. And they get them out, but if you don't pull them far enough from the well, you just kind of walk backwards to get back down in there again. So it's quite a task to take a horse out of the well. Well, anyway, renters began to get their telephones in. Old man, I forgot his name, I know so well, Paul Redeen's father, his name was Redeen. I forgot his name. Anyway, he told Paul, he said, you call up Westbrook's and see if they can hear us. So they ring, he rings, and Anna answers, and he says, is that you, Anna? He said, give me a kiss. And then the dad got so mad, you old guy, you're always so crazy. And he said, you wanted to know if you could hear over there. And of course, Paul, he always pulled these pranks anyway, and always a clown too. Mm-hmm. He's always that way as long as he lived, He always had something to say. And, either kid you or tell you something else,
Is this Paul Redeem?
Yeah. Did you meet him?
No.
No, you met him. And my name is Helen Marie. And so, him Maria. And so he'd say, Helen Mariah. And I didn't like being called Helen Mariah, Then I called Marie, our oldest daughter Marie. And of course, he called her Mariah too, and And it made her almost hate her name, you know, because somebody would say it didn't sound very good, you know. But anyway, the telephone line got in, and different ones were, I think, pretty happy that they had them, because if anybody was sick or something, they could always call them. And then I was going to say, Joe Carlson lived on the Canyon Edge down there. And they had all kinds of apple trees and fruit trees, prunes, pears. And she'd dry fruit soup and dry fruit soup. She dries this fruit on the roof of her house under a cheesecloth or a mosquito net or something. And because the sun would be on top of this roof and dry, you know, as hot as it is today, well, you can see where they dry, and she'd watch them and so forth. Anyway, she was a midwife, where she went and helped deliver babies. So she delivered babies on this whole ridge, maybe, of fruit soup. And I mean big. I suppose about a couple gallons in this. And say a gallon and a half anyway. And here she'd have prunes and raisins and apples and apricots and pears or something in this and make a big stew out of this thing. And she thickened it with tapioca, mostly the large tapioca, and put sugar in it. It was good. And she'd make it thin because it seemed like it wasn't thickened from the tapioca, but she made it thin so. By the time it was all gone, well, you know, it was all eaten up, you know, not all thick on the bottom or anything like that, but it was so good. And that was a treat to all the kids, so, because if they were mama's in bed with a brand new baby, and it was something for the kids to have fruit soup or something like that while mother was sick, and they wouldn't have to worry something about what. To get, they'd always get bread and milk or something though, but this kind of tied them over till mama got on her feet again. She was a very wonderful woman though, just a very wonderful person. And she was so handy with crocheting and making clothes for other people. And then...
Can you tell me the story about those?
And so there was people by the name of Moody that lived in the canyon on the American side, American Ridge side of the hill, but it's across the canyon from Burnt Ridge. And there, when they were sick, she'd always carry all kinds of good stuff down to these people because they didn't seem to have so much. Well, anyway, they got diphtheria. I don't know how in the world they got diphtheria, but could have been from drinking certain water or something. And two or three of them died. And here Mrs. Carlson went over there, and she made dresses, or took maybe some of the dresses that Edith had, or her daughter had, or something with her little. But she made him real clothes to bury him in. And then she'd take the flowers of her hat and put in their hands in this coffin. And the father had made the coffins in those days because they were so poor they couldn't afford to buy coffins. The coffins are so expensive today, it's terrible. They must have been, I don't know where these were buried, but some of them were buried on Burnt Ridge, I think. I wouldn't know that for our crew had been on American Ridge too. They have a cemetery, which is quite interesting to go to a cemetery. But I don't know whether they were buried there or whether, but I know one was buried, I think, on the Burnt Ridge up here. I'm not certain, but I think so.
She sounds like a good woman.
Well, she was. She was such a kind woman. She was always doing something for somebody all the time. And then knitting stockings, or she always had something to bring to somebody who was sick or something like that. And she was quite creative and knew how to make all different things. She'd make like a Santa Claus she'd bring to some people little red Santa Claus and with a little cotton rod and a red cap and a mustache and a suit. And it would be about, 18 inches or two feet, quite large. And then she would make like they did in Norway, they'd make chickens, a rooster. Or she'd make
Do you mean cook it like they do?
No. It's all by hand. You know, she'd use cotton and red cotton flannel and stuff them, you know, make dolls or Santa Clauses, and they had these long white beards and so forth.
Was she Norwegian?
She was Norwegian. And, but back in Sweden, they have so many customs. And, they maybe have a rooster, maybe that's made out of straw completely, you know, some grain straw, and it's just stuffed out there, and it's just mostly the color of straw. And of course they probably have red, you know, like on the combs and different things. And then they have what they call, it's a goat. And it always brings good luck at Christmas time. And they do have goats in their barns, you know. And at Christmas time, they bring them a special treat to their goats, or you know, for I guess the good luck and joyful Christmas or something. Then they have what they call an elf. And all the elves.
Did you do that? Did you take stuff to your goats?
No, we never did that. But they did. It's quite a custom in Sweden. It's just a custom, I mean to say, in Sweden.
Oh, you knew about it when you were young.
But anyway, she do make some of these things for herself here. And but like the Santa Clauses, I know that she gave away, and lots of these things she gave away. And but they had what did I tell you now? They had, they believe, well. It's just what do you call them? Elves, and the good elf will come at night, you know, and do these things, you know, maybe leave a pair of shoes or something. And there's always a good place of the fairy godmother. Mother, it's these elves that come like we about the sleigh bells and the reindeers, and how they all make all these toys for them so Santa Claus can come with those toys. Well, anyway, they all had a lot to do with this in Norway. They all bring these things and so forth. And of course, like in Holland, they set their shoes on the outside of the door, you know, and receive gifts.
Did she know a lot of ways to help people when they were sick?
Well, she must have. I don't know. Why? She knew so much, you know. She must have had some training in that, and she would make a wonderful nurse, because she always had a way. There was no for answer. She couldn't do it, you know. It was just in her. Just loved to do things for that.
Can you tell me the story of the two friends who were complaining that they didn't have, you know, the right brothers and sisters, and they were going to go talk to Mrs. Carlson to find out, you know, the facts of life?
They were two sisters. They weren't just good friends.
Oh.
And these girls are getting pretty big.
I like
to play with it, don't I? These girls were getting pretty old, you know, and of course they didn't know the facts of life. They still thought that the doctor come and brought the babies in their suitcases and valises. And so anyway, they got to discussing and walking home together, and they were talking about this, and they didn't think of fair. Edith Carlson and Selma Ruberg, and they were, well, Edith had an older sister when she was the youngest, but Selma only had all brothers, I think about five brothers, and Edith had four or five brothers too, and she didn't think it was fair that the doctor always gave boys, when here at ours they were getting all girls, and they were just about, and they laugh about it today, the thing, there was a devil thought that the doctor come to brought the babies in the police in their suitcases. But you know, that's what they always used to say. Mm-hmm. And of course, then they got more modern than that. Now, you know, and this must have been about almost 50 years. I guess almost 50 years ago. They'd say, oh, my sister, we had to start about the baby last night, you know. And we were to a church convention, and they said, why couldn't somebody come, you know, to this church meeting? So-and-so wasn't there. Well, she said that the Stark visited their home last night, she said. And Mother wrinkled her eyes, brows up, you know, thought that didn't sound very nice, you know, the Stark had bought that baby. So that was supposed to be quite modern. I mean, first it came in a suitcase, and now the Stark would bring it. And it's a funny way of saying it anyway. that was a secret, absolutely. It was such a secret to them. It wasn't even funny.
Would you just learn, you know,
you had to
by rumors?
You had to learn on your own. That was all just to it. Mm-hmm. There's one thing I wouldn't want to mention, but we'd have a rough time, you know, gone for a long time. And maybe my older sister put me wise, and I was worried to death, you know. I was a good doctor, you know. And you know, I kept everything to myself, and so of course that happened.
I wanted to ask you just one thing from when you were a kid. Do you remember about school? To any of the teachers, is there any teacher that you had that really made an impression on you? No, just one that, you know.
Burtonell French was about the, you know, related to, his name is Carlton. Carlton. Which one was the senator?
Burton.
All right, here's Carlton Fred. And we had such a big school. Right around, way around 40 some people. We've had it down on the report card 48, and I think we've had around 60 kids too, or for that. But so we should have around here someplace in that old cupboard upstairs, maybe tell the names of everybody that went to school. But he lived in Troy, and he married a French girl. No. Yeah, he married a French girl, but his name was French, his last name. And but he'd walk from Troy out, and so he had to walk about 5 miles out, because I think the road was longer than it was now, so he walked by about 5 miles to the schoolhouse, and sometimes he'd take a shortcut and go past Lauren Johnson Place through the timber and hit the railroad track and come that way when the road was good. But he always read a book. He'd read a book, you know, coming out, you know, hold a book like this, you know, and he said, I keep one eye on the road and the other one I'm in the book, you know, and so he did a lot of reading. But the bad part about him, he told so many stories, you know, he tells stories and stories and stories about all things from way, way, way back, which was good in a way. But sometimes he'd be telling to the lower class, he's all grades in one room. And so he'd tell maybe the third, fourth graders, he'd be sitting up there and tell all these things, various stories and different things. And he'd have that whole school just quiet, you could hear a pin drop. Everybody's listening to him. And then he said, well, he says, I'm reading this to the children. You rest of you better get back to study. But that happened day after day, you know, because whatever group, he always made it interesting. I think the kids liked to come to school because it was interesting. Mm-hmm. But there's one thing that I thought was bad for us. I don't know. We probably, I know we, maybe we probably had that same reader for 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm. And after you've had the thing, you finally could read it by heart, you know, but I knew everything by heart. And it was kind of discouraging. And then finally I remember going through the third grade, but that was a bigger step because I don't remember having a second grade book. I don't remember having a second grade book. But the third one even wasn't bad. Fourth grade was hard. We had the Wheeler book. Mm-hmm. And that had about, fairies and all these stories of, I wish I had a Wheeler book today. And they all had such hard names to pronounce, great big, and they were always a make-believe story, but they were interesting. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't give anything to have that, but... it was a harder book. It was Hercules in one of them. That wasn't hard. Hercules wasn't hard. But these other girls, I don't remember. But they were just some like fairy godmothers or maybe princesses from far off land or something. But, so I wish I'd had the book today. Poems and everything was so much harder, but we always had to learn the poems all through up to the eighth grade. Every book that you went through, you learned all the poems, like the Village Blacksmith and Evangeline and Longfellow's book stories, but most all of them we'd have to learn, and which was good. I think it was good because it really heated up your memory. You can remember so much better because we learned everything by heart. And we had to, of course, when we took geography, we learned all the states and we learned how to draw the maps and stuff like that. And when we took physiology, well, then it was all the bones and the names of all the bones and cells and everything like that. Which was good too, you know. I'm glad they did that because, I guess had time for it because we only had this. We had reading, arithmetic, grammar, physiology, geography, history, spelling and penmanship. Yeah. I think that's about the course of our school. And it was interesting, it was good for us, and I liked it, it was easy for me. But he was good. We had him for about 5 years. Oh, yeah. And we got maybe more than 5 years. Mm-hmm. And he was good, and we everybody got good grades, you know. I mean, not just that he gave good grades, but when they took the con exams, I don't think, or are they state exams? In school.
I think they might have been state.
I think it's state. And the 3 highest in the county was Elmer Johnson. He had 94 and 96 and 98 or something like that. They're the highest in the county.
In Burnt Ridge?
Burnt Ridge. Okay. And then C.L. Smith, he was a funny old guy. He was always hot-headed and it's just the way he felt or showed his oats, I don't know which one. But he had it in for everybody, you know. He knew better, more than anybody else, although I don't think he did. I should be saying this, but because their sons are living on American Ridge, and they're fine people. But goodness, he punished those kids, you know. He did probably have them standing up at the blackboard, maybe, and make a ring up there where you'd have to step on your tiptoes and hold your nose inside a ring for punishment. And then if he thought he couldn't learn anything, well, then he put a dunce cap on him and set him in the corner of the room. And sometimes kids want to know how to work the problem or something, you probably hit their kids' hands down like that, you know, on their hands. And so they didn't get much help that way. But that can't be out, the person could tell about this, but not mention names. And I don't know, they had even the eighth graders, the big ones, you know, some of the boys are pretty big before they got through the eighth grade. Anyway, one of the boys threw a brick through the window at him. And so then he called school session, I guess. And you want to know who went and threw that brick? And we, from the littlest of us, heard it and knew it was. And they run off a lot of sweet people. I'm going, I guess they're all more of sweet American people going there. But anyway, everybody knew, but nobody squealed. Not a one soul squealed, not even little kids. So he got away from them. That was Alvin Swanson's. He's a caretaker of a Bertrand Cemetery, but it was Alvin Swanson's older brother. But I guess he had it. But anyway, he chased, I think it was Gustav Carlson, and maybe Lars Larson, and I don't know, Claire Johnson, that would be Kelvin's father. Anyway, I don't know what happened, but anyway, he chased them down the side of Burnt Ridge, and they were going to go through the fence, you know. And the boys cleared the fence, and they ran clear to this house up here from him. He dropped everything and was absolutely seabed. But he got tangled up in the fence and tore the bottom of his pants out. Of course, he couldn't go to a place. The teacher.
So, what was he chasing?
He was such a funny guy, you know. Maybe he wasn't, I think he was teaching an eighth grade exam certificate. Of course, you could do that in those days. But we might have mentioned that Miss Tillsman, but it can't be mentioned. But I should be striked, huh? But anyway, he had it in for the kids, you know. It was terrible, you know. So they were all scared. My brother came to school one morning. We had one of these styles, you know, that you could take a come here and drive, and some of them, bad weather, rainy weather, or too much snow. We had the style with the box up like this, and the steps here, and steps here, and then the steps going to school this way. Well, anyway, but when they come with a sled or a wagon, they could drive alongside and unload the children right down on top of the style, and then you go into the school. But otherwise, if you're walking from the north end of the ridge, you walk up this side, and if we come from the south, we'd walk up on this side and come into school. That was kind of interesting, but anyway, my brother came to school, and he said, good morning, you know, talk to you, good morning. And he got mad and took and spanked him and broke his stick off on him, you know, see, he was just out of sorts, you know, or showed his bigness or something. And here he just applied to say good morning, you know, and just kind of smiled at him and, boy, you beat him up. So, he didn't use good sense, you know. And then the next teacher we had, her name was Kitch, and I think she shouldn't maybe given these names. I probably shouldn't be giving these names. Of course, I'm dead now. But anyway, we had some rough kids, and they would fight and wrestle. They couldn't get along with the boys, and the boys wouldn't pick a fight, but they were just determined they were going to pick a fight. So they'd fight and fight or wrestle. But anyway, whatever this one boy did, I don't know what he did, she got awful mad, and she tried to hold him in after school for 3 days. And so then the third day, she got some of the older kids to hold both doors, and she went after them. She had Lunar, she went down and got some willow sticks and whipped that kid, you know. Oh, He cried bloody murder, you know, she'd hit him on the legs and hands and all over the whole body. I don't know what she did, when he took off her clothes and all, but she, part of him, so it wouldn't be the bucking. But she, he spanked that, it just was bloody murder, you know, and he just cried. It was just, so next morning, his mother come, and she was pretty mad about it, you know, and I don't blame her. I suppose she told her, you better go home, you get some too, I don't know what I told her, but that was awful to treat a person. And then his sister, poor girl, I guess she never had much clothes, and they didn't have much, lived in an old house, but almost up the cemetery, kind of in the hill there, around there. So I think it's closer to the fence line, ran away, it's gone. And she was raised, only girl, youngest, and she had four or five big brothers, you know. I had five, I say, big brothers. And she was the only girl. And of course, she was more or less boyish, you know, because raising around the boys, you know, and always got such a kick out of things, you know. But why she picked on this girl, I don't know. But this girl, she sat there and her dress, it wasn't hooked together. And I don't suppose, you know, some didn't have very good pants or anything else. But anyway, she showed her skin on her back, and she was sitting up in the front seat, and, you know, the whole bottom. But I don't know why she got mad. Oh, I think people were kind of maybe laughing at her because her dress was open, you know, could see a part of her bottom and her back. But we kids, I guess, were too dumb and too scared. The teacher, I suppose, you were almost helpless. But anyway, she took that kid and pulled down her pants and beat her in front of the whole school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was cruel. Are you anxious to go tonight? Are you taking off today? Pretty good?
We'll have to leave by 6. That's all.
Are you going on to the coast tonight?
Oh, no.
Oh, I thought maybe you were. I mean to Boise?
Oh, no, that's in Tuesday.
Oh, I thought maybe
No, I'm not that kind of
person. Anyway, and then from there, see, I remember all our teachers. And then we had, when I was in seventh grade, then I had Esther Christensen. She was a good teacher. She knew, I have to take that back. We had Margaret Smith's sister. Margaret's sister, June Cole, and she was a good teacher, and she was kind of a jolly person, and she was the one where we got to have reading after afternoon hour just to settle the kids down, and she was a teacher for all eight grades. And she'd read like Uncle Tom's Cabin or our those kids? I know them so well. These two boys who run away from home. Look at that. And then the Pepper family and Annie of Green Gable and I don't know if that Helen and her babies was a whole book or not.
I said,
Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn. And, one of them they had mostly, you know, gave it was the Mustang. That's a book too. And of course, that's more for boys, but they all got a kick out of these stories. That she would read, you know, because she was good. And everybody obeyed her because, well, good teachers, you know, children naturally obey better than words. And she was interesting. We had her for quite a few years. And then from that, then we had Esther Christensen. And I was in seventh grade when I had Esther Christensen. And she was good. We took our tests. I think two subjects, maybe take who could take physiology and I think it was geography. You could take those two. Then the next year you took your subjects. And so it was Esther Christensen. I guess I had for my eighth grade too. Then I was out of school for that year. And I think it was that year that Mom and Dad celebrated their 25th anniversary.
Was that a big
celebration? Yeah, it was a nice one. Lots of the church people came, and it was down here in the living room. And and my sister knew about it, but nobody told me, and even the school teacher, anybody told me. I couldn't understand why they wouldn't have told me, because I was, but, oh, I could have been about to. I'm 15 years old or something. But anyway, I don't know why they didn't tell me. And that night I talked, we were really friends with our teacher. Oh, we had Miss Smith too. She was a real one that you just always could pal with, because she was a nice. With Esther Christensen, well, we'd talk, you know, and this night she seemed like she didn't have time to talk, but she wanted. She always did the janitoring too, you know. She'd sweep the big school house out. And so that night she was busy. And nobody said anything to me, and I thought it was so funny my older sister wouldn't say something to me about it, but they were afraid maybe I'd tell it. I said, well, I wonder why I'd tell it, because it was on my mom anyway. But anyway, I didn't find out about it, but anyway. They all come home, and Oliver and Oscar and Helma had bought Mother and I silver set for their anniversary. And I remember, and they got lots of silverware from the church people. And they had Elvin and Elvira, they were just little kids, about 4 years old, twins, to carry in the gifts, like, because they couldn't bring the silver and things. So they hand them out here and then have to carry them into the living room. So it was a nice evening and had a nice cake and whatever they had. I'm sure it was more than cake, though. I think they went clear out. Generally, they used to have cookies and cookies and sandwiches and cookies and cake all of it. And I don't, and lots of times they'd have desserts, but not have too big of a gathering like that. They couldn't hardly do it.
Can you tell me about the party games that you talked about?
Oh, this is fun. Oh, play games and party games. And so we had a lot of square, what you call square dances, and folk songs, but we never thought more than that they were just games, more or less, we'd call them. But there really were folk dances and square dances. And,
Do you remember any of the songs?
Yeah, I should have gotten back on that. Now, some were, oh yeah. I thought about what to call it. Oh, shoot, I get away from my Tucker. He still ain't to get his supper. Supper is over, dishes washed, nothing left but a piece of squash. Old man Tucker, big and black as my old hat. He combs his hair with wagon wheel and dies with a toothache in his heel. Get away from my Tucker. He's late to have eat his supper. Supper is over, dishes washed, nothing left but a piece of squash. And then set my little jug down to town. Set my little jug down. You're the one, my darling. And then we'd skip, 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 shoes, you look like my old shoes. Look, my darling, call again, what you do? Call again, what you do? gone again. What shall I do? Skip-a-loo, my darling. Sugar sweet, and so are you. Sugar and sweeter. No, I better go. Rats in the sugar bowl, 2 by 2. Rats in the sugar bowl, 2 by 2. Rats in the sugar bowl, 2 by 2. Skip-a-loo, my darling. And when he fell through, he fell through, nigger, in the haystack, he fell through, skip through, my darling. My books is gone away, my books is gone away, my books is gone away. Skip through, my darling.
Would you ever make them up?
I don't know where they all get. Got these. And then sent my little jerk down to town. Sent my little jerk down to town. Sent my little jerk down to town. I want to spot a house. I had it done with that shit stuff. Nobody living. Nobody. Oh, I had it, but for the nobody living. See. And then anyway, we changed, and so some was going this way and some was going that way. And we held around, hands around this and going around this building, but we were on the inside building, but we were singing about this old house. This old house. This old house, nobody living in this. No, it's more than that. Then I think we signed up. We gotta get more of that. But then we had Crocus Star School, the best school of all our school. Crocus Star School, the best school of all our. Tra la 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 la. Crocus Star School, Carl Gustav, kind of hero, great man, Carl Gustav, the best man of all the men, Carl Gustav School, the best man of all, best man of all, Carl Gustav School, the best school of all school, the best Carl. Carl Gustav School, the best school of all the ta la 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 la. Another one. Set me gloss, egg of pomination, see him yawn, kundalace, you to book, and the start of screw, but you couldn't interleave a fruit and dee. Tra la 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 vierium, to venio vierium. Set me gloss, egg of pomination. No. Say, set me gloss, egg of pomination. Samuel, Kundalisa, with the book and the shirt of scream, and Kundalisa, fruit in thee. Tell la la, so you're a bit so when you're a soul. To book and the shirt of scream, and Kundalisa, fruit in thee. Couldn't live without you. I put my glasses on my nose and see if I can read. In the book it says, I love you. And the book is there. And I couldn't live without you. There's another one now.
These all the movements that went with them, didn't they?
Yeah. There were, all in it. But I got another one. I think I said, that was. Cobra's hair was white and quill, and dad with toothy fish heel. Get out of the way for old man Tucker. He's the way to eat his supper. Dishes washed and supper over, dishes washed, nothing left but pieces washed. Old man Tucker back, woman Tucker big and back at my old hat. Comb his hair, right away on down to the Guinness Hill. I don't remember them all, but there's just lots of them. Some are more lighter than others. You know, it's interesting.
You used to go over to, to Big
Yeah, Bear. We did that. We went over there and played all those songs, and we knew so many of them that we practically took over. Well, we were around 30 young people, you know, and of course they got in the ring too, but they sat and watched us because they were more what you call American people, you know, and that probably didn't do what this had been brought over from the old country. But now they have folk dances in Sweden on Midsummer Day. That's like our Independence Day. And like all 4th of July, and we attended them, and they had all these folk dances, and they were in circles, or in square dances, and they were costumes, Swedish costumes, and the Norwegians were in their Norwegian costumes, and the Norwegians, I know, they wear their costume for all celebrations and for weddings, and so they don't have to buy another dress for another wedding or something like that. That's what Mrs. Torfin Vine, if you would want to hear lots about Norway, Mrs. Vine lives out in American Ridge. She could tell you, and so would Mr. Vine, Torfin, it's his name. Her name is Herlog, and his name is Torfin. And yeah.
What kind of things would you do?
Well, I'll tell you, I mostly we went to literaries, and we went to sometimes parties at people's homes, and they have parties. But I didn't go to many shows, very few shows. I think I went a few more after we got married. But he was always gone working. He was home a little bit in the summertime. In the wintertime. But he was always farming for somebody else out around Moscow and so forth. So it didn't seem too much. Although we saw like a midsummer picnic day, we used to celebrate the 24th of June just with a big picnic from our church. But everybody came from Moscow and Derry and all this way just because there was something gathering, yeah. But then, of course, there was 4th of July celebration. People used to go like to Lewiston and watch the fireworks or something like that, or Moscow. But now that is uncommon now. You know, people aren't interested that much. But have you been to a rodeo in Lewiston?
No.
You ought to go once. Did you